Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, November the 27th, the day before Thanksgiving. And we have a tradition in our show. I think it's 5 years now that we've been joined by our friend Frank Burke to do our Thanksgiving message. And that's exactly what we're going to do again today. We'll be joining Frank in just a second. We're going to get into the topic of Thanksgiving and what it means to both of us. We're also going to talk a little bit about the country today, because I think this is, of all the Thanksgivings I've been through, this is one year when we really need together as a family and as a country and just be thankful for what we have and stop calling each other names, which is what's happening in the country. So we'll talk about that, and Frank always has a surprise or two for the audience. So let me say happy Thanksgiving a day before to our friend Frank up in Wisconsin. How's the weather, Frank?
Well, let's see. There's a tremendous storm brewing with the northern part of the state and some of Michigan, and a lot of Minnesota is due to get a foot of snow. We are due to get maybe an inch of rain where I am. So that's going to be the weather.
So a white Thanksgiving in much
of
the Midwest.
And a rainy one for us, and we've had more than enough rain.
Right, yeah. Well, down here it's, you know, we're not going to get, well, we may get rain tomorrow, but we're definitely going to get some temperatures in the 40s tonight and maybe for the next couple of days. So we're kind of getting the, not what you're getting, but something, you know, around. I guess these things always come south. I don't know. When I look at the map, if it's cold up there, it sort of comes south to us. Not obviously as bad as it does up there, but it'll be fairly, you know, nice weather to celebrate Thanksgiving. I've always envisioned Thanksgiving with a little chill outside, Frank.
Absolutely, Sylvia. That's the Wisconsin in you.
That's right. That's right. Yes, if I had grown in Miami, I wouldn't say that.
Right. Well, you know, my vision of Thanksgiving is always, like with you, a cloudy day that's a little windy and chilly.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. And, you know, the little fireplace and maybe, you know, a little drink to keep you warm or something.
Absolutely.
Something like that. Something of that nature. Yes, absolutely. Well, we want to talk about Thanksgiving. Usually in the past, we've spoken about Thanksgiving in a general, more general way as a holiday or so. I like to talk about Thanksgiving this year. And talk a little bit about the country, because as I said in the introduction, I cannot think of a time in the country's history where a Thanksgiving wouldn't be more welcomed. You know, I mean, the idea of actually people sitting around the table and talking about something other than politics is something I look forward to, Frank, because this has been such a poisonous year. We were talking off the phone before we went on that the First Lady, Melania Trump, went to a school a couple of days ago, and she's getting booed at a school. Now, that to me is every adult who was in that room needs to go home and explain to their children, you don't boo the First Lady. I don't care what party she's from. You just don't do that, Frank.
Well, those are the adults that have been telling them to boo her. Because they're using children terribly in these things. You know, that poor girl who obviously has some mental problems, Greta, whatever her name is, that they had addressing the UN on climate change and screaming and yelling. I mean, this is crazy stuff.
Yes.
You don't do this to children.
Well, that's right. You don't, that's exactly right. You don't have the First Lady come to your town or to your school and show that kind of disrespect. I don't care who she is. I don't care what party she's from. I'll give you an example, Bill. I'll give you an example, Frank. I was looking at my phone, and there was a guy named Bill was trying to call me, so that's why Bill came out of my mouth. So sorry about that. But I'll give you an example. Back in 1979, Game 7 of the World Series, President Carter visited the stadium. It was in Baltimore. The Pirates were playing the Orioles. And Game 7 was in Baltimore, so President Carter came. This was not at a time when President Carter was not doing very well at that time, as you know. Popularity.
Right.
And yet, you know, I stood up and I applauded him, gave him a welcome as the President of the United States. I didn't have children at the time when I did this, but I said to myself, you know, if a five-year-old is looking at me, I want him to see me respecting the office of the President. I have 1,000% disagreements with a fellow on the field, but he's the President. This is a World Series game. You know, we can disagree without always disagreeing, Frank.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, I think that one of the things that this reflects, and this may sound like a stretch, but think about it, okay? And that's the fact that the problem that we have, the problems that are that occur in places like Afghanistan, in many of the areas in Africa, in many of the Asian areas, especially in China, is the fact that you're dealing with tribal societies. These are societies that have no concept of nationhood. It's only their own warlord or their own tribe. And in a sense, I see that having happened in the United States, where people are departing from what is it that we need for the good of all the people to, well, my tribe is a victim. Let's talk about our bunch. That's what's really important. And so you have this incredible shattering into groups that promote hatred and discord and cannot see that we have to act for the benefit of the country. And these people who say, you know, well, if one person is offended by the nativity display, that's too many, or the statue of the Confederate soldier, that's ridiculous. You cannot live like that. There'll
that's
always
right.
be
no.
someone who's offended.
Yes, and you're right. And you know, the problem is, and you're seeing it in the Democrat Party to a large degree, is they've become a party of identity groups. Everybody, you know, there has to be somebody that represents each of the identity groups on stage versus looking for the most qualified person who can be
right.
president. You know, that used to be, that's what primaries were for. But I was really taken back by that reception of Melania Trump at a school. I say, if we've gotten to the point in this country where we cannot applaud the first lady at a school, that some people are so angry with her husband that they have to get up and boo a lady who is, that's, she's not a political appointment. She's the wife of the president. And that's
absolutely.
The way it is. And it really makes me sick, Frank. It makes me think that maybe we need to have this Thanksgiving conversation at our table this year. And people need to say to each other, you know what? There's a lot more that unites us than divides us, Frank. I really believe that.
Well, that's true, but we have to acknowledge it. And what these groups are looking for, you know, it started out, if you want to look at the start of the civil rights movement, it started out with people, the African Americans, looking for equality. What Dr. King said about black and white children playing together, that's what his dream was. But what it's turned into is a fractious bunch of groups, each of which is looking for preference, special laws for them, special programs for them, special this, special that, and they've lost sight of the fact that unless we act as one, we lose our strength.
Well, that's exactly right. If we don't realize it's the old story, we're all in the same boat. You know,
yes.
We're all sort of sailing in the same boat and sort of, you know, going in the same direction. But I just think that what I've seen here in the last 10 or 11 months, the kinds of attacks on people, and I know, I understand that there were crazy people who attacked Obama. Yes, there were. There were some crazy people. I never felt that I was one of those crazy people. I had massive disagreements with him, but I thought I always treated him respectfully. as the President of the United States. I accepted his victories. I didn't like it, but I accepted it. But these people, Frank, they don't want to accept the fact that they lost the election. I mean, that's the root of their problem, Frank.
Oh, of course, of course. That's exactly it. They had such incredible expectations. And, you know, part of those expectations, let's face it, and let's go back to, you know, the term in law, fruit of the poisonous tree. There was so much corruption that they felt that the election was fixed on their side. The money coming in to the DNC from the George Soros people and the foreign governments, the sellout by the Clinton Foundation, all of these things. It was like, hey, wait a minute, this race is fixed. Put your money on this horse because it's going to be the winner. And when it didn't happen, when it was the people who spoke, oh, my God, they couldn't take it.
Yeah, that's it. And there, you know, you have, you know, insanity. An insane example, I should say, of this craziness against Trump and just the craziness in our society in general. This lady, Stacey Abrams, who was defeated for governor in Georgia, she was defeated by 60,000 votes out of something like 2 million. And then she's claiming that the election was stolen from her. How do you steal 60,000 votes? It's interesting because there were other black Democrats who won in the state. Nobody's saying that, you know, they cheated to victory. And so I kind of get the feeling that there's some people who you know, they bang the drum of racism for their own benefit, not for the benefit of blacks, but for their own personal benefit so that they can stay relevant, they can sell books, they can get on TV. It's for their own fame, Frank, that they're doing this. Not for black people, it's for themselves, Frank.
Absolutely. And you know, let's take a look at it. Let's go back to it. What is a racist? A racist is somebody who has an absolute personal conviction that one race is so far exceeds another that the other one is unworthy. Okay, that's a true racist. Somebody who throws an ethnic slur is not necessarily a racist. There's somebody who is a little crude, who has used an ethnic slur. They're not, they don't necessarily, you know, subscribe to that code. They may be angry at one black person, or one black person may be angry at one white person, and that's it. So you take a look at that, and then the talk about white supremacists. Well, I just don't see it. There may be some, but the number of them is certainly minuscule in this country. Mm-hmm. And I can't believe that that would be the case. There was a big furor years ago about a book that came out called The Bell Curve, in which they were talking about relative intelligence levels. And they indicated that by certain measures, whites had a higher level than blacks in a general sense, not, you know, we're not talking about particulars. Oh, that's racist. The whites are no. The book said that Asians had a higher level than whites. So we can't even study these things. I mean, you take a look at Dr. King and some of the most accomplished black people. You realize that their intelligence is through the roof. So it's not a matter of a general thing. But even when you're talking about that, and you're talking about it in the sense of different groups, different cultures act differently. Within the American culture, certain groups are, I won't say excluded, I'll say they're held apart, but some by their own volition. So what do you do to educate those children? And that's the point. If you can't study it, if you can't say, wait a minute, let's look at these cultural differences. If you want to buy into the, it's a small world and a one world after all, well, kids are going to suffer for that. People are going
to
suffer for that.
Yeah. Well, I just think that, you know, I have a an idea this year, Frank, that we should all stop talking about politics for, like, let's say, for about 48 hours, 72 hours. And if anybody brings it up, we should tell that person to, you know, leave the room or whatever. And it seems like we should be trying to talk this year more about what unites us, you know, what makes our family, you know, what brings us together, the things that are fun. And because I just think there's too much talk about, you know, I hate you, you hate me politically. And I think that's killing, it's killing the country. It's certainly killing our sense of humor. I mean, you can't crack a joke anymore without somebody being offended.
Yeah, isn't it ridiculous?
That's just ridiculous.
Oh, it's insane, because I remember when I grew up, there were all kinds of, you know, ethnic shows on television. And today, oh my, that would be unthinkable. But at the time, the people who liked them best were the people whom they were about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And, you know, there was a big furor over the old, now not the radio version, but the TV Amos and Andy show. But, you know, those, there has been a long overdue Emmy that should have been given to that cast. They were brilliant African-American comedians. And that was what the show was about. And as I've often said, long before the Civil Rights Act, they integrated millions of American living rooms.
Yes, and I'll never forget, you know, it was before the movie, the show The Little Rascals was before my time, but one of the things that was most enjoyable to me was to watch The Little Rascals and see the interaction between the kids. And, you know, nobody cared. I mean, there were a couple of black kids in the show, and they interacted, got along with the other kids. And I always felt that, you know, more adults should have seen The Little Rascals, because that is in so many ways, I think, that, you know, a way that we can all get along. You know, we can get along. I don't want to sound like this guy in California, you know, let's get along,
right,
whatever his
right.
name was. Yeah, I don't want to sound like him, but I do think that we need to at least respect each other and say, okay, look, I know how you feel, but I disagree with you. Let's have a glass of wine and talk about what you did last year, uncle, or whatever your accomplishments were last year. I mean, I know that we'll get together with family members, and we're not going to – I mean, most of us are going to agree. I understand that. So it's not like I'm going to be running into some crazy anti-Trump family member. But even if I did, I would simply say, look, let's not talk about that. You know, let's just lots of other things to enjoy this year. Frank, we're going to take a little break, and then when we come back, we'll get off politics in the second segment. And you've got a couple of surprises, and I've got a couple of thoughts. So why don't we take a little break and listen to the music of my good friend Carlos Geddes, and we'll be right back. The music of my good friend Carlos Geddes. We have a link to his website and the show information. Click on that and learn more about his career and his music and where he's playing around the Dallas area. Let's get back to our friend Frank. Frank, this is going to be the non-political segment. We're going to start Thanksgiving right now.
Great.
You and I are going to talk about what makes Thanksgiving special. You got a couple of surprises for us. And what makes it, I'll just give you my quick definition of what makes Thanksgiving special. Number one, I didn't know anything about it before I was 12. So when I came to the United States, I had no idea what this holiday was. I had no idea what it was. So I had to learn it literally by seeing all these turkey posters in school and all these, you know, posters of the pilgrims. And, you know, that's how I learned about it. So I picked it up that way. And always liked it from the very beginning. I always loved the idea of a day in the year when we give thanks, because I felt, especially in our first year in the United States, that we had a lot to be thankful for. So I kind of liked it for that reason as well. But it is my favorite American holiday because it is purely American, Frank.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it very definitely is. And it says a lot, and it brings up something that I think can be a great unifier, and it's right in line with Thanksgiving, and that's food. You know, all of the different dishes, one of the great things about, in my life, about being a kid growing up in New York, is that you knew a lot of people from different ethnic and religious backgrounds, and we all shared our food together. And, you know, at Christmas time, across the street, the Doyles, their grandmother was Polish, and Polish and German, and they would bring us cookies from, you know, that Anis cookies. That was the old country recipe, and I grew to love Jewish food and Chinese. In fact, I'm going to be making some knishes right after Thanksgiving. And Italian food, I probably cook that more than anything. You introduced me to Cuban food. Arroz con pollo is there's some in my freezer. So, you know, if there's one thing that the feast might symbolize, it's the fact that if we sit down at the table with one another and enjoy each other's food and customs, it becomes very hard to hate.
Yes, yes. It's kind of hard to hate when you're enjoying a nice lasagna and a glass of wine with the person in front of you. Yeah, it's kind of hard to call them names when you're both
exactly.
enjoying food like that, or turkey or whatever. You know, it's just
well,
it's kind
or
of hard.
When I was in a sweet
yeah.
potato pie, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just kind of difficult to hate people when you're in such a pleasant environment. When did you, just out of curiosity, I mentioned that I learned about Thanksgiving literally coming to the United States. We landed in September, and in a couple of months, of course, we were into Thanksgiving. And I had no idea of the holiday whatsoever, none whatsoever. But what are some of your early memories of Halloween as a child, Frank? What were some of the earliest one you recall?
Well, I think it was always going over to my aunt's house. My aunt was like the matriarch of the family, and relatives would come up from Pennsylvania, and of course, we did not live that far away. But everybody would do some part of the dinner, and we'd all sit down, and, you know, we'd have the meal and, you know, of course, say a prayer and give thanks. And it was just a wonderful memory. One of my favorite memories was when my mother, her job was to cook the turkey, and we were in the kitchen. It was a cold day outside, but, oh, the kitchen was like a steam bath. It was just awful. It was so hot. And she reached over and she opened the window. It was one of those windows. You opened the inside window and slid out the storm window. And the wonderful, cool air that came in and flowed over me, that was something to give thanks for.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because our first Thanksgiving dinner, we went to my uncle's house. My uncle and aunt and a couple of cousins lived in Wisconsin. So we went over there, and they were kind of explaining. I remember my cousins were kind of explaining the holiday to me, and they were explaining, you know, how they were cooking turkey to celebrate. And then my uncle took it a little bit more philosophical. He was saying about how we give thanks on this day for what we have. It just seemed like for us, in our particular situation, having just arrived in the United States, in our particular situation, giving thanks for what we had was something that made a lot of sense, Frank.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you lived something very comparable to the original pilgrims.
Mm-hmm.
You came from a place where there was persecution and difficulty into
mm-hmm.
a new land. And there were people there to welcome you. And certainly that meant a lot.
That's right. That's exactly right. Well, give us a taste, speaking of food, give us a little sample, a little sampling of your surprises this year, Frank.
Well, really, I think there's only one. Knowing that you and I are very much into history.
Yes.
I thought I would do a little bit of reading from the in line with what we're talking about. the last part of the Proclamation of Thanksgiving, which was put out by President Abraham Lincoln on October 3rd, 1863, which, of course, was in the heart of the Civil War. So, let me just read this. I do therefore invite my fellow citizens in every part of the United States, and also those who are at sea and those who are sojourning in foreign lands, to set apart and observe the last Thursday of November next as a day of thanksgiving and praise to our beneficent Father who dwelleth in the heavens. And I recommend to them that while offering up the ascriptions justly due to him for such singular deliverances and blessings, they do also, with humble penitence for our national perverseness and disobedience, commend to his tender care all those who have become widows, orphans, mourners, or sufferers in the lamentable civil strife in which we are unavoidably engaged, and fervently implore the interposition of the Almighty Hand to heal the wounds of the nation and to restore it as soon as may be consistent with the divine purposes to the full enjoyment of peace, harmony, tranquility, and union.
Right. And we think Beautiful. We have problems today, right? You know, in the sense, imagine what how divided the country was at that moment. I mean, we think we got problems today. We do. We have problems, no question about it. We certainly have a lot of intolerance on the part of people. But compared to, by Thanksgiving 1863 or November 1863, I mean, there were probably some people who thought the Union would never come back together, Frank.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, the more you read into history, the more you understand on both sides. And I think that's a large part of the problem. And that's the fact that the schools, by and large, no longer teach history as really it needs to be taught. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there's just a superficial type of glossing over, and you have people talking about things that never happened, and emphasizing, taking things out of context, and trying to project today's values on people who lived 100, 200 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work. You have to see them in the context of their times.
That's right. And it just seems to me like when I remember going to school back then, and I remember it seems like there was the way the American story was told. It was told along the lines that, look, you know, this is an exceptional country, an amazing country that all these people came to. Yes, mistakes were made, and perhaps the most difficult of all the mistakes was slavery, because, you know, part mm-hmm. of the population did not enjoy the full benefits of citizenship and so on. But, I mean, people were willing to fight to stop that. And it seemed like the country had this ability to correct itself or correct its mistakes. But that's the story that I was told. Now the story is, well, everybody was a racist. Everybody who put the country together was a racist. And it was a terrible country. It was a horrible place. And that, of course, is a story that, first of all, it's not true. But besides that, how do you grow up to love your country if you're being told that it's a terrible place, Frank?
Right, exactly. And, you know, how do you trust anybody? Mm-hmm. You're always getting ready to call somebody a name. You're putting people in these terrible categories. He's a racist. He's a white supremacist. He's this, he's that. And we've gotten to a point where our liberties are in very much danger. You know, every time I hear the words hate speech, I cringe. I've never agreed with the, hate crime legislation. Hey, the law is the law. If you hurt me, you pay a penalty. If you hurt me because you hate me, well, that's in your mind. It's what you did that's important. I'm not going to see you punished for what you think. And
right.
Who decides what's hate speech? The minute you cannot tolerate speech, no matter how reprehensible it is, if it's Hitler, if it's the Nazis, if it's anything terribly bad, if it's Joe Stalin as communist, the
mm-hmm.
minute you start silencing something, you've lost free speech.
That's right. That's exactly right. And as I've always said, you know, I really don't care what you say. I'll give you the microphone to say it. I don't have to listen to it.
Right.
If you want to have a podcast or a radio show, or you want to write a column that I completely disagree with, you have the right to do it. Where I draw the line is where you are interrupting me from speaking, or you are trying to say, well, we're not going to let you talk. And we've seen too much of that in our college campuses recently, where if you don't hold a particular point of view, we're going to come down hard on you. And I just think that that's un-American. I mean, the country that I fell in love with as a 12-year-old was a country where you and I could be a Republican, you could be a Democrat, but we could get together because we had so many things in common. You know, we
mm-hmm.
could talk about baseball, we could talk about the history of the country, we could talk about Abraham Lincoln, we could talk about the country. We had a lot more in common. Yeah, we could disagree over the minimum wage, okay. We could disagree over whether this particular program was good or bad. Okay, those are political disagreements. But there was so much more that united us, and that's what I'm afraid of, Frank, that those things that united us are being torn down or deleted, and I don't know what this is going to – the impact this is going to have in 40 or 50 years. I mean, if George Washington is now a guy who owned slaves, well, he did, but he was also probably responsible – the man probably most responsible – for giving us this country that we have. So, I mean, that's George Washington I want to remember, not the fact that he owned slaves at a time in the 19th century or 18th century when most farmers or ranchers did, Frank.
Oh, of course. Of course. It was one of those things. I mean, the whole belief system back then was quite different. And people did not know what they know now. So But the point is, Silvio, that our younger generation may not even know these things.
Mm-hmm.
They may not even understand that, you know, when it came to the Civil War and you looked at the Confederate armies, most of them, the vast majority, did not own a single slave.
Mm-hmm.
It was not about that. It was about the fact that in the 19th century, most people never went further than maybe 25 miles from where they were born or where they lived.
That's right.
Travel was too hard. And as a result, your loyalty was much more to your state. The government was something far away. And as they saw, thanks to manufacturing, as they saw the northern states growing in power, they saw their own liberties, their own way of life being threatened. Slavery,
mm-hmm.
In some cases there were people who were vehemently for it. But to a lot of people, it was incidental. It was just something that was there.
Right.
And so as a result, you know, they were fighting for their homes.
That's right. Well, they were, like you say, you know, they were fighting for their homes. They were fighting for what their way of life and what they understood states' rights
yes.
to mean. I mean, sometimes, you know, I think over the years, the definition of states' rights has been, I think, poisoned, because I'm a big
very
believer
so.
In states' rights. I mean, I'm a huge believer in states' rights. And
mm-hmm.
my definition
mm-hmm.
of states' rights is that I think government works better at the local level than it does at the federal level. I mean, yes, we need a federal government. I understand that. But I think a lot of issues like education and health care and how to run schools and lots of things are better done here than in Washington. So that's my definition of states' rights. But my definition of states' rights also means that you're going to respect the rights of everybody. Okay?
Absolutely.
So if a, if a segregationist was saying that, you know, segregation is right because, you know, I'm in Alabama or Mississippi, well, that's not the definition of states' rights that I believe, Frank.
No.
But yet today, if you say, you know, I'm a believer in states' rights, you're automatically a racist. Well, no.
Yeah. No, of course not.
Yeah, and that's the problem, that we go down these, you know, these definitions, and we quickly call people names without giving them an opportunity to explain themselves, and I think that's dangerous because it kills communication. If we don't have communication, if we don't have conversation, you can kiss Thanksgiving goodbye, Frank.
That's for sure. And you can kiss the country goodbye, because who's going to fight for an abstract notion that, you know, we feel we have to apologize for? That's the one thing about, well, it's not the one thing. I did not like or trust Barack Obama or his presidency. I think we could go on for hours. In some cases we have. But the bottom line was, as soon as he was elected, here he was, the first black man elected president of the United States, and he goes on an apology tour around the world, telling people about how bad the United States was. This was reprehensible. He had
right.
no right to do it.
No, he didn't, and I think he did. He divided the country a great deal after he did that, because I'm not even sure most black people believe that. Most of the black people I know and have met over the years love the United States as much as I do.
Yes.
They understand the history, and they understand that their grandfathers and great-grandfathers didn't have a good deal, I'll just put it that way.
Sure.
But they like the deal they have now. I mean, if you're a black young man or a black young woman, this is the best place in the planet to be right now, the United States, the way it is right now, Frank.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, it has done wonders for so many groups who have come here. Yeah, the groups have suffered in almost all cases. There's been new people arriving have been subject to, in many cases, bigotry and sometimes violence and things like that. But in the end, it's what happens. It's what you make of it. And knowing the American system, which so many of these people now, talking about socialism, want to get rid of, want to destroy, that's the core of the success, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, anybody who wants socialism in the United States or preaches socialism doesn't know what socialism is. I'll just put it that way.
No, they do not.
If you're preaching socialism or you want to bring that here, then you don't know what it is. You simply do not know. All you have to do is look at the job creation in most of those socialist countries and look at job creation in the United States, and you can see the difference between those two systems. Well, Frank, one thing that I'm positive about is that we're going to do another show next year for Thanksgiving, and I'm also positive about the fact that I think at the end of the day, this is a good nation, and the people are good, and we're going to figure this out.
Well, hopefully, it's true.
Yeah, hopefully Thanksgiving 2019 is a step in that direction, Frank.
I hope so, too. You know, there's one thing I want to say about our African-American brothers and sisters that I have always loved and respected. And it has a lot to do with Thanksgiving, and we all need more of it. And that is their love of religion and the fact that when I go through a neighborhood, especially when I lived in Milwaukee, on a Sunday, everyone was dressed up to go to church.
Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal. And, you know, that's what we can't forget, that the root of Thanksgiving is not the turkey. It's God.
Right. That's right. Well, that's it. We're not giving thanks to the turkey. The turkey is just what we're eating. But it could have been fish. It could have been beef. It could have been, you know, whatever. It just happened to be a turkey, I guess, because of the region that they lived in. But it could have been a lot of other things. But you're right. It is a day to give thanks. And I'll say one last thing, Frank. I give thanks to you for our friendship. And I hope that you and your family have an absolutely wonderful Thanksgiving. And we'll get back to the politics at another time. But for now, let's just all forget about politics and wish a happy Thanksgiving to everybody and enjoy your day with your family. And if it gets cold up there, Frank, just put more fire in the fireplace. That always seems to work.
Well, Silvio, I would like to say the same to you and your family. Especially, it's going to be a very special Thanksgiving for your second son, who is
yes.
about to get married. And to our audience, to the people who listen to us and hopefully enjoy us and, as we hope, get something out of it. And I would like to close with just a wonderful grace, a wonderful prayer that said before meals, a very short one. O Lord, who has given us so much, grant us one more thing, a thankful heart with which to receive it. Amen.
Wow. No, you couldn't have said it any better, Frank. Amen. That's exactly right. Let me give you a warm embrace from Texas, and we will do this again as we always do.
And let me give you one from Wisconsin where the snow has started just now.
Okay, well, see, I brought the snow. What a nice guy, Frank. I brought you snow as I was doing this with you. Well, my best to you
beautiful.
And to your family, Frank, and a very happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise, Silvio. Take care.
Okay, thank you so much. Our good friend Frank Burke, author, businessman. We first met when he contributed an article to the American Thinker many years ago, and we've been friends ever since, and it's always a lot of fun to do these conversations for Thanksgiving with him. Well, as I've been saying, this is a time to be thankful for something, your family, your friends, your life. So don't talk about politics at the dinner table. Let's put that aside for a couple of days. We've got plenty of time to get back into that. But right now, let's just say thank you for everything that we have, and we have a lot to be thankful for. Bye-bye, everybody.